Hello there. Welcome back to the Pathfinder 101 podcast. Thanks for tuning in. This is Swanik Jaykumar. As you are aware, the intention of this podcast is to examine, from a high schooler's point of view, various professions beyond the basics by interacting with experienced professionals from various careers. Almost every child has loved playing video games at some point in their life, but they know very little about what goes on behind the scenes to make their gaming experience as fun as possible. This is where programming and developing skills come in handy. Today's interview will be with Mr. Travis Prim, the lead tools engineer at Striking Distance Studios. He has previously worked at LucasArts, Rockstar Games, Blizzard Entertainment, Respawn Entertainment, and Apple. We will be discussing why Mr. Prim chose to join the computer science field, specifically the video game subfield, and his journey to his current role at Striking Distance Studios. Hi, Mr. Prim.
Hey, Sonic. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. Jump right into the questions.
Sure, yeah.
I would like to take you back to your high school days when you were thinking about college, your career, etc. I'm assuming that you probably started like me with a bit of confusion and uncertainty in choosing the right path. And after a few years, you have a successful career today. And I'm sure you learned a lot during this journey. So I'm just trying to understand your journey and gain a better understanding of that process.
Yeah, I think the idea of being confused is pretty appropriate. You know, I think for my journey, I know that a lot of different people took a lot of different paths to get to where I'm at. But looking back on it in high school, I couldn't really have like cared more about a career. I think I was doing a lot of sports. I was in orchestra. I was a Sherpa on the Pecos trip. Like I was all over the place. So I was just really having a good time at St. Mark's. I think it was an amazing place to have all those opportunities and got pushed to kind of take advantage of all of them. But yeah, I didn't know what I wanted to do coming out of college. I applied to about a dozen different universities, probably about six different programs. Like I applied to one university as a performance major for viola. I got one as like a chemical engineer and I didn't know anything. I just took AP Chem. I was like, maybe chemical engineering's a thing. That was at A&M for like petroleum or something that they were really strong in. So I was like, that sounds cool if they're known for that. Tried to get into good schools in general, but I bounced around mostly focusing on business. And I actually went to having such uncertainty about what I did. I ended up focusing more on like what the university provided me, more so than me saying like, hey, I know what I'm going to do. And knowing that in mind, and I also had a scholarship, which helped make the decision. I went to USC and as an accounting major. So I was in their like accelerated accounting program to try and get your CPA license in 4 years, and very accounting heavy. And then, but I chose USC one because I went there, had some scholarship money. The other much more realistic thing was, people on that campus are beautiful. And finally it was really, like, I knew all the programs were pretty good, right? Like, you know, I think you have some schools where maybe you have like a tech focused school or a more creative school that they really have like one kind of, this is like maybe one good program they have here. But USC to me was like, you have, I don't know, at the time, probably top five business schools for undergrads, top three accounting undergrad, top cinema school, notably good engineering school, and it's in LA. So I also thought it'd be a great time to just live in LA. I always thought that'd be a really cool thing. I played volleyball and we did the Pepperdine volleyball summer trip. So I was a part of that. So I always loved going to LA for whatever reason I could. So out of all those kind of combinations, I ended up at USC. And yeah, I was accounting for a year and a half. And I think I hated it. So I just didn't like, after St. Mark's, I felt like a lot of business ends up being a lot more soft skill and less tangible, hard skill focused, which is totally fine. But I wasn't doing well there, and that was frustrating me. So USC, back to the idea of like super diverse, good programs in general, they actually have a video game development program. So I love video games in high school. I was like voted basically to most likely to be like a super game nerd in my senior year. And I told my parents I went and took CS 101, got an A in it, and then I told my parents I was switching. And then the rest was that. I just did the rest of the year as university as computer science with no background.
Were there any other factors, like a mentor or a professor, that particularly inspired you to continue with CS?
No, I think it was just more so fun. Like, I enjoyed what I was doing again. I thought the really basic computer stuff to me, which it was actually funny because a lot of students, there's like computer science programs in high school. So a lot of students, especially in that class, were cruising and getting A's, and they just had checked out entirely. And so, you know, I was still working hard and I still enjoyed it, and I thought it was really cool. Granted, it was frustrating to see them get A's and like just not do any effort, but it actually paid off a lot more, because I think in the second, like after a year and a half or four semesters, like they started struggling because they had to work again. So they're getting to topics they didn't know. So for me, it was actually difficult in that first semester, but then it kind of cruised. My habits allowed me to cruise more so than they did the rest of the time. I don't think really there wasn't like a professor. I think the big thing for me is I had a really good group of friends. When you're focusing on games, like we all go into CS 101 and there's like, they have computers that just like straight computer science. They have computer science with like a concentration in physics. They have a concentration in business. So you kind of know, you get to know who's doing CS plus whatever flavor. And so you kind of gravitate more towards the game developer students. And from that group, I just found a good group of friends, and, you know, they helped me out learn more stuff when I was struggling, as well as just make the whole experience a lot more fun.
Given your current exposure to various fields and the different knowledge you've acquired, is there any path that you would have liked to explore that you did not have a chance to?
I don't know. I feel like a lot of people, I have a lot of friends my age now who are like, or even classmates who are, they're like, I wish I did computer science. So I think I got pretty lucky on that one. And then I think from my parents' point of view, they're like, well, if you're going from accounting to computer science, those are like the two super safe, like you will have a job that is, you'll be fine later kind of career paths. So from that point of view, like games has always been, I've always loved video games, still play them. And, you know, I think being able to make them was really fun, and it's a challenging field for sure. I think in hindsight, I don't really look back and say like, I wish I was comm or chemical or chemi or aerospace or anything. I think actually looking back, I think the best major for me from like a, oh, this is a dream kind of scenario would have been architecture. I think architecture is something that's actually very hard to pin down in high school. I guess maybe if you're like creative enough to think like, oh, I like industrial arts plus physics plus this, it's like, and then it's also intimidating because a lot of the times it's 5-year undergrads to do an architecture degree. But I actually think architecture is really cool. The more I've grown, I'm not super creative, but I can be a little bit creative, and I'm much more technically focused. So maybe more of being like a structural engineer / architect would have been something like I'm debating I would have wanted to do. But I've actually just decided to enroll in like community college and take architecture classes. Like that's been a really cool thing I've done in my personal free time.
Earlier you mentioned that your like studying habits in CS 101 like helped you succeed in that later on. Were there any important skills that you wish you had developed before coming to college, or in terms of like before even like joining like the job world?
Learning how to dress appropriately. I remember my first day of class, I remember I had like some athletic shorts from some St. Mark's team, and I'm like just in there and like just in a t-shirt and shorts and just looking kind of like I just woke out of bed, rolled out of bed, because I probably did. And I'm like in the elevator, I see my reflection, I look kind of like an idiot. And the next thought in my head was, I'm like, there might be a cute girl in this class. Like, I need to not look like an idiot. And so then I was late for my first class by 10 minutes because I was like, got to make good friends. And I think my fiance, who I actually met at USC as well, so she's seen the whole transformation. She is like having a little bit more style and care can really go a long way. I'll say that even from like a professional point of view, you know, everyone says like it's meritocracy and all this, but the phrase "you dress for the job that you want," that really does matter. Even in technical fields like my own, like people will still, there's nothing to replace what someone sees and initially treats you as before you even say anything or do anything for them or with them.
What skills, personality traits, or attributes and abilities do you think are crucial to your job as a game designer?
Well, I'm not a game designer. I'm a programmer on the team. Designers make the game like fun, and I'm not that creative. And I'm a software engineer, so I make sure the systems actually work and make sure like anything a designer comes up with can actually happen. Because yeah, like I work on more like engine system level things where, like before when I was at Apple, I was doing AR VR technology. So it's not, but most important trait for that success is still really communication. Once you get past about a 5-person team, you really do have to communicate. And I think especially in technical fields, people will think that their expertise will supersede that. And I will tell you that even after going to Apple and seeing someone who's been 30 years and they're like a wizard with their code, everyone can hate them on the team and then they don't utilize anything. And the whole team can be brought down by one person's bad attitude. So really, unless you're going to go do it by yourself with like less than a 3-4-person team, like you really need to make sure your communication's on point, regardless of what you're doing.
Next question is sort of just a side tangent, not really much to do with like the topic, but
yeah,
what is your favorite game and in general and why? And then second part to that question, what is your favorite game that you have worked on and why?
Yeah, so the game that probably like the biggest impact on me was Final Fantasy VII. I was like a huge RPG person. Like I said, I'm not like super creative. So when I actually play games, I like them to be more on a rail versus a set golden path versus like Elder Scrolls. You're kind of just go explore the world. I actually really just like those games because I'm not that into the world most of the time. But I played that a lot as a kid growing up. And then, so that was probably the most impactful, I think, where it's like, this is really, really a cool medium. After that, I think, I don't know. I usually just end up playing like some social game with my friends. So sometimes some multiplayer game with my friends, not always social. It's like Overwatch or people like to play Apex now. Actually having to learn Apex more because I'm switching onto the Apex team. So I'm trying to play Apex a bit more nowadays so I can not be completely obliterated. And but yeah, I've also kind of enjoyed just more casual games like Overcooked. That one's pretty funny if you haven't played that one. And then the games I've worked on, I can rattle them all off really quick. There's Star Wars 1313, which never came out. That was like an E3 demo. If you go look back at the internet, they remember it. God of War Ascension, Grand Theft Auto 5, Red Dead Redemption 2, next Grand Theft Auto, because it takes that long to make those games technically. Heroes of the Storm, Hearthstone, Overwatch, Diablo 4, and then right now it's Star Wars Jedi series, or an unannounced or unpublicly announced what it is, but it's part of the Jedi series, and Apex next. So out of those, the most fun to work on was probably, I think, like Red Dead 2. It was the one I worked on the longest and had the most relationships with friends, and I think as an engineer, I'm much more inspired by people in the team I'm around than I am technology. And I'm in a minority in that sense for engineering. So that team was phenomenal. And everyone on that team made that a great experience, even during some of the more stressful times.
Can you talk a bit about how the gaming industry is evolving and where you think the gaming industry will go in the future and what new opportunities might be available for people to capitalize on?
The gaming industry as a whole, you know, I think they're going through a lot of growing pains. I think a lot of people see these titles and things they relate to normally and they're like very personally attached to them, but the industry as a whole has been around less than 30 years for the most part, and with that if you had a company, for example, like their HR department, that doesn't get good randomly in 30 years, right? If you, unless you like really put a lot of effort into it. And I think games specifically has been trying to grow up a lot in the past, I'd say like 5 years. The entire lay of the land has kind of changed, where people have started talking more about burnout and trying to have a healthier balance of life. People have talked more about like harassment and misabuse and misuse of power in the workplace. People have talked more about just like pay has evened out a lot more. That used to be a very notorious topic of, you know, I think Elon Musk might have said it, where he was like, we love hiring game developers at SpaceX because actually landing, was it like putting a spacecraft to dock with a satellite dish is significantly easier than like the networking complexity of World of Warcraft. So they're like, yeah, you can do it. We would love to have you. And so I think when you know that you're at that caliber of programmer, you also know that you can kind of go get any opportunity that you want. You can go do that if you wish. And having that pay discrepancy between what you could get and what games is, that used to be a pretty exploiting tactic, you could say, in terms of passion instead of pay. But it's been evening out a lot. So I think games have been giving larger development teams have been able to help make compensation closer to what is potentially available for most of their developers. They've been getting a lot more headway in terms of treating employees properly. I think work from home has pushed people even further into that retrospect, where you have these people who are on their computers all the time, and now they're like, you know, everyone's struggling through it. But now you have people who are in a digital world creating a digital content, where they might be also getting feedback from publicly about their digital content they're creating. They might just be spending more time with it and feeling more alone, versus when we were in the office, you might just be like, we made a really cool thing and this happened, versus now your first bit of feedback might be a YouTube video that says like, oh, they made the same character again, this sucks. So that can be a different toll on you. But yeah, I think as a whole, the industry is gonna hopefully embrace a little more remote work. They've kind of seen it happen. We do full digital products. It's a pretty easy idea to think that we could be full remote. I think that they're going to be continuing pushing like life balance and trying to make that adjustment. And I think for people getting into the industry, it'll be trying to figure out like which company is actually doing that appropriately with good measures, versus kind of just doing it for media.
What does a typical day or week look like for you? What kind of responsibilities fall on your shoulders? And could you also briefly explain the goals of your organization? And sort of as a slight tangent off of that question too, during like the life cycle of a game, like at the beginning, like just coming up with the idea, or in the middle, and then towards the end when you're like, I guess like debugging or stuff like that.
Yeah.
How does the design process or the coding process change for that?
Let's see, two parts. I think the first part that you're asking about like my normal days. I'm remote. I'm based out of Austin and my team's in California. So personally, I'm also a morning person because I got trained in California to talk to people in Europe every single morning. So I've always, it's also weird. Most people in the games industry will show up at like 10 a.m. So I was always weird because I was showing up at 8 in California and now I'm showing up at 8 in Austin, 2 hours in front of everybody. So by the time most people get in, I'm already done with like 4 hours of work. So that part's nice. But I think after that, usually a daily stand-up or something with the team, which is optional. So if you have something to talk about or want to sync up with, you can jump into there and talk to the programmers. Other than that, it's really going to be trying to tackle your tasks and like a code and debug problems. And I think a lot of it will depend on games. The product of a game is so much more diverse than, you know, I think than my time even at Apple, where it was, you know, my product was maybe like an API layer. Sorry, like one chunk of code that interacted with somebody else's chunk of code, and then mine also interacted with somebody else's chunk of code. So your product was more like engineer to engineer. And games is, as an end product, ends up being a lot more diverse, where like my user could be an artist, my user could be a designer, my user can be a producer or another programmer, or maybe even another team, or maybe a customer, right? And so having to be able to navigate that and move around, there's a lot of communications that has to happen, different departments, different ways of thinking about stuff. So you have to make sure you're on your toes and trying to put yourself in other people's shoes and understand the problems. I think that part is really fun, but I mean, some people get frustrated about it. Some people love it. Some people hate it. But I think that's one of the things that makes game programming extremely unique from a software engineering point of view relative to other potential software engineering positions. I think it's going to be mostly just that our team is pretty loose in terms of meetings. I will say the current team I'm on is very senior, where I would say most developers are pretty self-sufficient and able to handle their tasks, versus on teams where you're having a more diverse group of experience. Like, you'll have more meetings to be able to synchronize up people. You'll probably have more people on the team, in which case you have to put more time and effort into that synchronization, versus our current team. You got some pretty kick butt people on it. So we all can kind of just do our own thing, which is good. I think I'm probably in like the bottom third of like experienced, which is kind of crazy with 10 years experience. Other than that, in terms of the development process, programmers are kind of needed just about all the time. And I think, you know, during the production process, just so you know, we typically quantify them as pre-production, production, and, you know, post-production kind of becomes a thing nowadays with all the live service games. But pre-production, and you might even want to say there's one before that, at concept, where like concept probably would just be like game directors and some artists, maybe like five people, maybe. And they're kind of come up with the overall idea. They'd be like, we're going to make a shooter game, and this is what makes it different. And that'd be kind of that phase. Pre-production would actually be a small group of people trying to get proof of concept, sort of. So programmers would be more developed and or more included in that scenario, because you're actually trying to probably make the product, or you probably, if you're going to go make a new Mario, right? We're going to call him Pario. Now he's starts with a P, the arch rival of Mario. And he's going to go back to 2D instead of 3D. It's like 3D was for chumps. We're going to go back to 2D because 2D gameplay is where it's at. You would want to be prototyping that in pre-production, trying to get some sort of art scope in there, some art feel, see what like the, you'd be choosing, like what engine are we going to use? Are we going to make our own engine? What are the major features of the game? Maybe that will dictate what engine we need. And things of that nature will end up being done at that stage, where, you know, your code will probably be a lot looser, faster. It's fine if it has bugs. You just need to make sure like something's even fun or worth going further. Production will probably be the longest phase. That would be where you're kind of ramped the team up, probably at the end of pre-production, start production. That's going to be where you're doing a lot of your hiring. Production should be where like you have your systems in place for the first, you're creating your systems for the first half, and the second half is you're just creating content. So usually at first half of production, you might like be trying to hit a vertical slice of like, this is the quality bar we're going to hit for the entire game. And you might have one level. So we might have one level of our Pario world, and that plays perfectly, or maybe one whole world section, so we can see the navigation between the levels as well. But then we're going to have eight worlds total. That's what's in the script that we've continued to make from pre-production through production. And then that second half production would be like, okay, we hit this bar. We had all the tools. We know how to make it. Go make it seven more times. And that's usually kind of how it works. And then it kind of shows up. So during those times, like obviously near the end of production before shipping, programmers are going to cycle more onto like optimization and working on the specific platforms, making sure it actually works. You'll have different problem sets in between, but those are kind of the high level ideas of where you should be thinking in terms of how are you creating the content itself.
What do you like most and least about your work?
I think what I like most about my work is really the people. I think, I jumped out of games and I came back. And I think the thing that I was missing was kind of people that were really engaged, that I found made making the product more interesting. I found that I just wasn't ready to, like, I think it is, I think it's much better for an individual to have that disconnect, to not find their value in work. I think that's a very slippery slope to be caught in a phase of burnout or in a phase of where you're just not in control of a lot of your life, which is a very dangerous spot to be. But I didn't feel like I wanted to be a little bit more engaged for at least a little bit longer earlier in my career. I felt like when I was at Apple, I wasn't fully motivated. So I came back into games to try and do it for a little bit longer. And I really enjoyed my time at Apple. I just thought that I'd be more than happy to go back at some point in the future. It just wasn't for me at this current stage of life. Like, I'm sure I'll be over it eventually. But and I think it's good to have seen both sides of that coin. But that's always something where you talk about being able to have a more sustainable work-life balance. Like, Apple was phenomenal for that for me. Like, I could never have asked for anything better. It was just that little itch to try and come back and really, really get caught up in the madness again. And then the worst part might be that madness. At the same time, it might be that madness in the sense that sometimes, especially now that I went to Apple, I now have seen that there are solutions to some of the problems that happen on like a daily basis of, well, not daily, that's being dramatic, on a regular basis of things where it's just like, this is just a wrong system to do, or I have to ask HR for something and it's oddly confusing, or I can't find a contact for this person, or team dynamics are weird and it's hard to talk about it for some reason. It's like, at Apple, there was a system in place. Everyone like had a way to resolve things and it was good. And everyone was so advanced in their career that everyone was very self-sufficient and had their own agenda. So I felt like they all came to work with a much clearer mindset of like, this is work, let's get it done. But that risk of going back into a product where you are like more personally attached to it, you now might run into work problems where people are more personally attached to what's going on at work. So it's good and bad. It's what makes it exciting. It's what I came back for, but it's also sometimes the stuff that drives me absolutely bonkers at work where I'm like, this is just wrong, but I can't say that.
I should have asked this question earlier, but what role has your St. Mark's education played in throughout your college and now?
Yeah, I actually, I mentioned this a lot to my friends, or I felt like St. Mark's was actually way harder than anything else I've done. So I felt like it set the bar pretty high in terms of what I could challenge myself to do. And like I think I said earlier, where like I was doing a bunch of sports. I was on volleyball and track pretty competitively. And, you know, I think it gave me a lot of confidence to kind of just go out and try stuff, bouncing between like I said, sports, arts, AP classes, AP STEM. Just wait until you bring like your partner back and you show them like, my school has a planetarium. And my fiance was like, that is absolutely bonkers that you guys have a planetarium. I was like, I thought we had a planetarium. I was a 12 year. So I was there since first grade. I was like, I remember sitting in a planetarium in second grade. I thought it was normal. I think a lot of St. Mark's, what it does is it creates a pretty competitive environment, which can be challenging for a lot of young men, but that can open up so many doors and opportunities just for you mentally that I even immediately in college, like I made the D1 track team at USC. You know, I had a good time and did that, but then it also enabled me to not be like pigeonholed in accounting, where it was like, hey, I'd done a year of accounting. You know, university ain't cheap. It's not cheap program by any means, but it, being able to say like, hey, I want to do computer science, and you know, I get an A in CS 101, which is not the most challenging course, but it is definitely having that confidence, having that momentum and drive, like those, achieving those accomplishments at St. Mark's in various different ways in between like AP classes, doing the Pecos, getting pushed by Coach Turek and getting yelled at by him and still running my butt off. It was the mental change that you'll have, I think it will be very clear for a lot of people, because I did the same thing in college. I did the orchestra in college. I did the track team in college. I hung out with a lot of different groups. I think ethnic groups, I'm half Chinese personally. I was actually taking Mandarin at Hakoday because they didn't have the Mandarin program at St. Mark's. And, you know, I think just having those no limits and so many resources and high quality resources at that, like you'll be able to tackle the world, and you'll see a lot of people in university. They'll be like, why are you doing this? Like, you're already the athlete. Why are you trying to be an engineer too? Like, I don't know. Don't tell me what to do. So yeah, I think that was probably like the biggest impact, and it still has a big impact to me every day. Like even at work, it's like, if I want to go out and do a side hustle outside, like I started getting more involved with real estate outside of work. It's like, I do that because I'm not afraid to try something new, because I've got enough self-confidence, and the most of that came from St. Mark's.
You were earlier talking about work-life balance and how like that was more prevalent in Apple compared to your current job. What is your goal in terms of work-life balance, and what is your take on the concept essentially?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting topic. It's a very hot topic nowadays, especially with work from home. And, you know, I think one thing that a lot of people get wrong about work-life balance, well, there's a couple things, but the first, the most important thing I believe is that a lot of it is on worker. So even though I say like Apple, I had better work-life balance, I think my current company, Respawn, actually perpetuates better work-life balance. And I think that's something a lot of people don't take ownership of. And because I actually went to Apple to try and fix that. Like I said, games is a very passionate industry, so it's very easy to get burned out. And so I went to Apple with a very heavy focus personally on trying to make sure to like draw those boundaries. Where can I make sure like I'm treating work as work, and where I'm keeping myself correct in terms of my separation and thoughts, and making sure I'm working a healthy balance and not and getting what I want out of work. I didn't want another promotion for a long time, so I just went in and did really good work. I did all my tasks and I made my boss happy. Did I go in every weekend when we were crunching? No, because I got all my tasks done. And, you know, you might say like, oh, well, you're not being a team player at that point. And, you know, I think there's an aspect of teamness or of team attitude, and then there's an aspect of self-sacrifice. And I think that's something where it can be very murky. And so I think as long as you, I always recommend that you and your direct manager are the ones that you need to be the most transparent with. And that's the people that really matter the most in your actual management chain. One thing really nice about big tech is they actually will remove all of your levels. So if you just graduated college and then there's a 30-year veteran next to you, you're both just software engineer. So it doesn't look weird or like, oh, you shouldn't be leading this task or anything because of that. And I think that actually helps a lot for work-life balance and being able to just say like, oh, you know, I'm not a lead or a senior or a principal level programmer. Like, I can just let this go and we'll figure it out later. It doesn't look, versus some people might say like, oh, well, if you're high up, you need to be responsible for the entire product. And I think that's a very slippery slope to go down. But yeah, I think that idea of that ownership of really taking owner of utilizing that separation of work and life, I think people don't take as much ownership for that. And I feel like that leads to a lot of unhappiness in a lot of people. And it's definitely not about how many hours you work. Like a lot of people are like, oh, I have to work 12 hours a day yesterday for my boss who pulled me in. I can tell you, if I worked 8 hours a day and then hated it for another 3 hours and had to decompress for 3 hours, that's an 11-hour work day. Even if I'm not physically at work or doing work for those other 3 hours, like that's an 11-hour work day because your mind is set on it. So that's probably the other more surface level thing that people kind of mix up about it, is just how much time are you clocked in?
One factor that is relatively important, probably not the most important, but still has its importance, is like compensation when choosing a career or a job.
Money's important. Don't let anyone tell you it's not important. Money is very important.
Not the most important, though. Like job satisfaction might be above that. But
yeah,
without going into specifics, how does this industry and your specific profession compare to other professions in your industry and outside of the industry?
Yeah, I think software engineering in general, when you're talking at higher level engineers, it's a very interesting career at this point, because now there are things like coding boot camps. People could try to become a programmer in 3 months, in a year, or you can do a four-year program. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of really cool ways to get into the industry. So, and I think those can vary your compensation a lot, but I think it's one of those, I like software engineering hiring a lot because it's one of those things where I don't really care if you're out of high school or if you're out of college. I mean, it'll probably come up, whatever cracks or deficiencies that you might have will probably come up in the interview, and obviously will be more in queue if you're like, hey, I'm out of high school, I want to apply to your entry-level engineering role. You might pay a lot of attention to see if you're how you socially handle rejection and things like that. But or feedback, I should say, not rejection, feedback. But you know, I think from a compensation point of view, it's pretty stellar, right? I think almost it's not a secret. Everyone kind of knows like software engineers make good money. I think I mentioned it before where like games industry specifically was much worse about compensating appropriately. And now it's gotten a lot better. Some companies even are right toe to toe with big tech. If you ever want to go and figure it out, there's a website called levels.fyi. It'll be interesting. So it's like a much better Glassdoor. Like if Glassdoor didn't have all of the like payments and ads and stuff or login account blockers, it's an interesting website that can kind of tell you like where does your compensation look like. And I can tell you that those numbers are very accurate.
You're earlier talking about communication and how important it is for your job and most jobs in general. How important would you say networking is for your job?
Oh, networking is extremely important. Extremely important might be overzealous. I'd say it's extremely beneficial. It's not required, especially in a technical role, but to see opportunities that maybe might not be as apparent. So if you ever think about like, oh, we're starting a founding of a company, right? Like that networking is going to help you get to those opportunities and see those people and be in consideration there. Networking, I have found out, has been one of the most useful things I've done in my career. I actually got my second internship from networking. The one for Sony Santa Monica, which was the God of War team, I actually interned them in the fall while I was at USC. So what had happened was the year before, I think one of the Uncharted games came out and they had a play test booth. We're like, come play Uncharted. We love Sony, right? And they just wheeled over a little truck. It had a bunch of PlayStations, all that stuff on it. I just went up to somebody randomly at the booth. I was like, hey, you guys are at a college campus, right? Like I am a software engineer in the games industry. Like, are you guys actually here? Is there anyone here that's actually recruiting? Is there anyone here that's hiring? Because I was going into my last year, like I'm all about it. And or I guess I was finishing up my second to last year at that point. But they said, no one here right now, but there actually is a recruiter coming by tomorrow if you want to come by. So come back at this time. I did that, met him, did not land the summer internship with them, got a different team to help me out. But that guy remembered me. He remembers me to this day. He's like, you're the only student that came up and did that. And I think I was taking Japanese at the time in college as well. So he's like, oh, Sony Japanese, like this is going to be great. Even easier to pitch you for like unnecessary for spots that aren't necessarily open. And that gentleman still to this day has been a very useful, very, very good person and a sounding board to say, even if I'm not doing anything with his team, I can call him up and be like, hey, man, I have this other offer. I don't know how to talk about it. Or, hey, I had this confusing interview cycle. Like, I don't know what to say to this recruiter next. I don't know why people don't keep in touch with their recruiters. Recruiters are extremely useful people to be in touch with, right? And so I actually ended up not getting that internship. But then in the fall, they had an opening, right? And it's like, who in August in LA who can drive to that studio? Like the applicant pool for that is minuscule at best. And so basically they told me, they said, hey, we're going to open this spot up, apply. And, you know, I was the first person to apply. And then I got the, and then I got that internship. That's how I got to work on God of War. And so being able to think creatively and try to create those networks really means a lot. And I'll do a lot of like college outreach nowadays. Like I've presented at UT Austin and I've presented at USC back in the past. And I'll tell the students, because they'll ask me the same thing. They're like, how do I get into the industry? And I'll say like, you should really network with people in the industry. And they're like, well, who would that be? And I'm like, well, it would be me. I'm like, I'm telling you right now, it would be me. And I'm telling you right now, I say this every class, I tell them, I will tell you right now, the best thing you could do is email me any kind of personal anecdote about you, ask a question that was memorable, or even just say you're in the class and ask for feedback. And I will guarantee you that less than 10% of you will do that. And I say that right to students' faces. And I have never had a class with more than 10% participation email me back. So networking is extremely helpful. Not necessary, but extremely helpful. And a lot of people don't do it. So I'll tell you, it can really, really set you apart, especially in like more technical roles or things where people don't communicate as often. You look like a unicorn if you do that work.
This is not the last question, but sort of related to your job, the last question. What steps do you take to stay ahead of the industry since it's so like evolving all the time?
Yeah, it's a good question. For me personally, I'm taking my career more into management. So for me, I read personal management books. So most people, when you hear engineering, it's like, oh, I read white papers or I go try this other technology out. And I do that from time to time when I'm interested. I don't do it as much anymore. I used to do it more earlier in my career. But now being more people oriented, being more focused on communication myself. And actually in April, I'm actually moving on into a lead position formally. So being able to be that mass multiplier is more important to me than being able to increase my personal output. So that's what I personally have been focusing on. And to stay in front of that, like I said, I kind of take that extra time outside of work to read, try to expand my mind, read books, push myself to do things like networking and communication that are much more awkward. If you get two engineers in a room and you just start saying like, hey, what's going on? Like you can, you'll know it gets weird very fast. Yeah, I think those are the kinds of things that I have been personally focusing on. And if you wanted to be more ahead of the curve and from like a technological point of view, I mean, we're all on computers right now. That's the interesting bit about it is that you're on a computer right now. You can go in and start programming things right now and get ahead of the curve and try to push whatever you want about your code to get it to get a little bit better at it. Like, how can you make this go a little bit faster? How can you make this go faster on a cell phone? How can you make this go faster on like a PS5? Like what's different about a PS5 than the PC you're sitting at right now? Or how to do stuff over the network. Like there's a lot of fancy things that go into making a network work to make it so that when you try to shoot somebody in the head versus the body in Overwatch, like how does that actually work? Like that's a very intense thing. So, you know, I think that really getting into it is probably one of the things that I think is interesting about games is because anyone can get into it. You're already on a device that enables you to do it right now. There's no startup cost really. So just go for it. but that's kind of how I do it. And the other thing to being a good manager, I have found out, is to just be critical of your own relationships. that has been something that has been, the more I've paid more attention to like, how do I make good work relationships, like it's just creating relationships. So anything you kind of really focus on and being a good partner, like that can really help you be able to relate more to just other people in general. So I think it's been a really good learning curve to kind of like continually try to take my personal relationship further and further. Yeah.
This last part, we're going to sort of shift gears to like more of like a high schooler perspective on this. So yeah, whenever a high schooler like asks somebody or maybe their parents, what should I do when I grow up or something, because they're not sure, and then the parents just say like, I don't know, follow your passion or some cliche statement like that, particularly yeah, about follow your passion, what was your opinion on passion and how important do you think it is for a career?
Yeah, that's a good point. I think it's interesting to reflect back on mine because you kind of see the dichotomy of it, right? I took a pretty safe role that I didn't really know much about because there's not like an accounting club in St. Mark's. As far as I know, I don't know. There wasn't one when I was there. But you take something like that and then I end up in video game programming, right? And, I think it's one of those things where the more and more I've seen it and had a healthier relationship with my job, a lot of people talk about like do passion and money will come out of it. And, you know, I don't know how much I believe in that. I don't think that your job needs to be where your passion is. And I think that's where a lot of people get confused, where like the more and more I'm doing real estate outside of work, the more and more I'm like, I really, really enjoy this. And it's, so maybe having passion is nice or it is required for your eventual career, but I think you're so early on in your age and really like at university, there's going to be about 2x, 3x times the amount of permutations of opportunities that you're able to even grasp a hold of at even at St. Mark's, like so much more exposure. There's still going to be more. And, you know, I think the people that come in undecided, or maybe you come in as a major and you just know, you have to know that you don't really know what you want and you just are going to try and figure it out. That first year can really make a big difference. Like that's what I did, right? Like I went in and didn't really like business, didn't know what I was doing. I mean, it took me 3 semesters, so maybe you get a semester and a half. But I think it was something where I had a very supportive family, but I don't think that they were very like, they didn't intentionally do it. I think it was more on me. Like my mom was like more traditional Chinese upbringing and it can be very intense at times, you to say the least. And, you know, I don't think that like going to college to make games wouldn't have been a very easy sell, right? But saying I'm going into computer science and there's a focus on it, and I kind of mutter over the games part, that was a little bit easier of a sell. Granted, like I said, the scholarship also helped out a bit because now it wasn't like, oh, that whole first year is wasted. And I know that that can be very stressful. But I actually did a full fifth year part-time. So I was able to supplement that. And during that part-time, that's when I had that internship. And that's when I was able to search for my job a lot more aggressively. So I think from that perspective of trying to balance passion, obviously like I followed that, but I wouldn't really say my passion was computer programming. So I don't really know if that's like the appropriate way to approach it. I guess that's kind of my takeaway.
What advice do you have for someone interested in pursuing a career path? And in terms of like, how do you describe a successful programmer with a focus on like gaming?
You do have to have a very strong tech basis. Like that's kind of the thing, like I said, where like Elon was like, I love game programmers. There's like, it's more technical. And I think that might've been one of the things where like my group of friends helped me push through that and really level me up because they had all done computer science in high school. So they helped level me up much further. And I think I actually started TAing classes and I kind of asked my TAs after we went through, I was like, hey, to me, it's pretty obvious now, like which students are going to be really good. Like you can kind of tell as TAs within like the first 3 weeks of class, by the time the first assignment's in, like, you know, which ones are going to be like very proficient. And I asked them, I was like, did you think we were that group? And all of them have said yes. And I, you know, I don't say that to be like cocky, but I say that because I had no clue. I was just there hanging out with my friends, enjoying the assignments. I thought the assignments were fun. I thought the assignments were challenging and creative. And I was like, oh, these are really cool. And we could see, and we were learning from each other, like better ways to do things. And I think that naturalness kind of plays into that idea of passion that you were mentioning in the last question. But my passion was much more so like creating a good team environment more so than it was to be a good programmer. And so that, I don't know. I think with same, again, maybe to the St. Mark's background of just like having such high performance standards everywhere, I was like, I guess I got to be a good programmer by just hanging out and like being able to just generally be critical of myself like they would have been at St. Mark's. And after that, it's going to be kind of your curiosity, because games is an interesting field where it's not always about being correct. Like even in programming, it's not always verbatim correct. Like mathematically, we have to cheat physics a lot to be able to make physics run on your machine. So you have to, like, even as a programmer, you have to have creative ways and you have to understand the right way to do physics. And then you have to think about, like, how can I apply this to a computer and take shortcuts to have something that looks reasonable, right? Because you can't do like full calculus integrations to like figure out acceleration and rotation and things like that. You have to use chunks of time of samplings now, because that's what you got. Because that's how, when did your CPU finally come back around, right? So having that strong technical understanding and then being able to also be creative, like those are things where programmers, game programmers specifically, will need to be much more successful. And then communication on top of that will allow you to be able to just make products that are bigger than one person. So that's going to be kind of software engineering more in general.
Throughout this interview, you've talked a lot about like how important exploration is to finding like your particular what you want to do after college or in college and stuff like that. So yeah. What advice, aside from like go explore, try new things, don't be afraid to take risks, what advice do you have for high schoolers that are like undecided about picking their career paths based on your experience?
Yeah, I think a good place to start would be to take something that you like and think about the career permutations of it. You know, I think that's a very creative way about it. From my story, right? I love video games. And, you know, at that point, it's like, well, you could be game art. You could do 3D art. You could do 3D animation. You could have been a game designer. You could have been a game producer if I wanted just, they're mostly organization. And, you know, I chose programming because, quite frankly, I was scared of telling my mom I was quitting accounting. So I was like, computer science, like, she can't be mad at that. That's literally, like, what I did. I thought at a certain point, I was like, maybe I should be a designer. And I, you know, over the course load, I got to do some more design focused classes. And I realized I was a horrible designer and I didn't like it and I wasn't that good at it. So, you know, that was a good way to be able to have like a baseline and continue trying things. And I think that's what really got me the most exposure, was having a baseline and having some direction, but continuing to keep that curiosity. Like if you're really enjoying that baseline, you naturally won't look towards other opportunities. You'll be like, I want to become a master at this, which is great. You might've found your passion. You're very lucky. However, as long as you keep in mind that you can continue to try, there's nothing stopping you from doing a double major or a minor, or maybe you figure it out junior year and you're kind of panicking. Like that's not uncommon. maybe you go pick up a minor really fast in something else, you know, like, maybe you still have that baseline because you still want to finish in 4 years or something like that. Those would be things like I would think could be a lot more useful. And I've seen that actually be a lot more promising, where like my fiance, for example, she was in the critical studies part of the cinema school because she wanted to do animation, like 2D animation, and work in magazines. She later realized later in her career that, later in her time at university that, this doesn't really have like a future that she's excited about. So then she did like the design of marketing things for on-campus programs. Like you see the posters like, come to our homecoming this weekend. Like she was making those posters. And that led into digital design. That led into more UX UI, because she's like, I feel like UX UI is like the next spot for technology. And now she is working at a big tech company as a product designer doing that. And, you know, all of that stemmed from continuing to have that curiosity and that balance of both career and getting the life that you want, because getting the life that you want does involve compensation. And I think that's a much healthier way to think about it than to think like, I need X number of dollars. Is like, I want to have a family, or I want to have a house, or I want to live in a van. I don't know, right? Like van life. And you can try to figure out like, hey, what jobs allow you to fulfill those goals, right? And putting your life first of, and then doing the finding the job that facilitates that, I think that that can be a lot healthier of a way to go about it.
Sort of one tangential question that doesn't really have much to do with any of these. If you could pick one career that doesn't have anything to do with coding or programming or like backhanded sort of like designing something for code instead of all of that, what would
it? Yeah. Yeah, I'd have to go back to that architecture. You know, I cheated. That's like the one where I'm like, oh yeah, I want to try to do this. I actually got into this hobby of doing called aquascaping. So you end up making, it's like aquariums that aren't full kind of, but it ends up making like rock structures and I usually like put water and going in all around all of them. And, you know, at a certain point I was like, oh, this is kind of like the model creation part of architecture. And I was like, this part's what I actually enjoy. And so then, yeah, like I said, I just signed up for community college and I think it's like $300 a month or $300 a quarter or something. And like, this is cool. Like just learn more and more. And so I think it's confusing. Most people are confused. And I think that might be a common theme of why I've been able to continue to push myself to find something I like doing and not be like judged down or held down by opinions is that, yeah, when I called that community college, I'm like, I have no idea what courses I would want to take, but this is my goal. And they were so confused. They're like, that doesn't build towards a certificate or that doesn't build towards a degree. I'm like, I don't care about a degree. I just want to do this. I want to have a little bit more formal education. And you guys are kind of like the personal trainer that I'm buying at the gym to make sure I actually go to the gym. Because if I spend money, I will probably show up. But it's the same thing of when I was like switching majors into engineering. Like no one switches into engineering. Everyone switches out of engineering. And so I think it's like a common theme where it's like I'm fine just going the opposite way of what people expect. You know, you just have to not care what people judge you and you got to keep pushing forward and trying to have a good time. Just don't take it too seriously and have a good time. I feel like that's been a large part of the reason why I've been able to do such diverse things.
I think this will be the last question.
Yeah.
In terms of studies and gaining experience and with respect to your circuitous path, eventually ending up in computer programming, what are the different routes that a person could take to still end up as a computer programmer? Like from your experience, like your friends or anyone else in your company?
Yeah. I hinted on it a little earlier that it's really one of those things where you can kind of just carve your own path and take your own route. And at the end, it's, you know, you might apply for a job and get knocked in the face a little bit when you get rejected and just be like, oh, I wasn't anywhere close. But I mean, like my current boss was self-taught and he's wicked smart. He's way, way smart. And so it's not like, and that's the thing, especially with games, is that the university is only going to teach you so much. Like if you want to be at the highest level, you just need to be a creative and technical person. Like you can't say like, oh, my teacher is going to teach me how to do the next generation of ray tracing. Like you can't lean on a teacher to teach you that. You have to do that. And so I think that when you get to that caliber or you're trying to push that far into tech, that especially in the real-time game tech, like you need to be able to think creatively, have a strong technical background, and then want to do it. And that last bit's probably the most important part, because if it was easy, people would be doing it already. Right? So you gotta find these solutions that clearly have massive problems, or maybe they don't. Maybe it is someone just thinking about a problem slightly differently. But that's that creativity will still need to be there. So I think that is kind of at the very high level when you're talking about like senior and principal. And I guess to get into the industry, which I might have gotten off track from your question. The thing I look at for entry-level programmers is, can we speak the same language and same technical language? And are you willing to take feedback and learn? Those are the two most important things. I don't really look at your ability to do the job. I don't really look at your ability to come in and do the thing that you did in college here again. Like, hopefully we're beyond that. You never know. Each team's different, but that the ability to learn, right? And that's all communication and feedback and your attitude, is because we want to make sure that you're going to come in and you're going to be able to be taught by the team and be able to be a functioning member of the team and be able to learn from us as much as we will learn from that interesting point of view of maybe not being jaded by doing the same thing for a decade, right? And so I think that those are being able to both communicate it and take that feedback is very critical for new hires or for entry-level employees, as well as, like I said, being able to talk the same language. That's going to be the other thing I suss out. Like, if I ask you, well, this is going to get more technical, but if it's like, if I ask you, like, how does this variable work? How does memory work in this computer? How does networking work in here? How does, do you do 3D math? Do you do this? Like, and you can't answer any of the, like, that's bad. But I usually try to take the approach of, I want to know, like, what answer, ask questions that, what are you comfortable answering based on your resume? And then I usually like to push you to the limits, you know, and see how you react. Because that's what I personally aim to do in interviews, because that's going to be much more like real world. Like, you're going to have your task, you're going to get it to as far as you can go, and then you're going to ask for help. And that's what I try to emulate during my interviews, at least. Yeah.
Thank you for taking time to address all of these questions.
Hopefully this helps. All right, Swanick, have a good day, man.
You too. Bye.
Thank you, Mr. Prim, for the valuable advice and for your time. Thanks to everyone who's listening for choosing to spend your valuable time with this podcast. I hope you found this useful. To get notified about future episodes, please subscribe or follow Pathfinder 101 on Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Also, please visit Pathfinder101.com for more contents. If the blog or podcast added some value to you, please like and share with your friends and colleagues. Thanks again for your time, and have a great rest of your day.